Hey, everybody, it is Chris Aiken from Aftershocks TV and the Classic Metal Show. And if you think you're ready to make a podcast of your own, then it is time that you discover Anchor. That's right, Anchor is out there. It is free. There's creation tools on the site that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episode. So you can have music in your episodes if you want. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world has never heard before. Anchor will distribute the podcast for you as well, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a bunch more. Here's another good feature. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Anchor is great. It's very cool. And it is what we use right here at the CMS Network. Hey, everybody. It's Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show and the Aftershocks podcast. And I know you want to see this next episode, but right before we do, I just want to remind you that if you have an Amazon device, whether it's a TV or a Fire Stick or Fire Cube or whatever it would be, a Firebox if you're old school, make sure you add the CMSPN to it. Just look up CMS Podcast Network on your Amazon device, add the channel, and you will get every episode of all four shows for free right there on your TV. Make us part of your TV viewing every single day and night, all right? It's the CMS Podcast Network, CMSPN.com, and it is now on Amazon. So get it, all right? All right, here's the episode you came to see.
All right, guys, we have Fernando from Moonspell, new album Hermitage out February 26th. Fernando, how are you doing today?
I'm doing quite fine. Just, back at home. Portugal is living through a hard period now with these pandemics. When it started last year, we were, I think, a bit lucky. Also, our geographic position in the end of Europe near the Atlantic Ocean allows things to take their time arriving here. For instance, rock and roll just came in the 80s or in the 90s. It was really slow to get here to Portugal. But nowadays, yeah, I think that we're just caught in the crossroads between people being really tired about being at home, not seeing any results from being at home, you know, all the confusion that this new condition of the pandemics of the COVID-19 really plays with your mind. And also now it's time to manage the crisis, you know, and when it comes to manage the crisis, Portuguese people and politicians, it's not the best, let's say, trait we have, you know, to manage the stuff. So, we're just, trying to keep our head above the waters, really.
Well, you kind of dove into something I wanted to talk about right there, but talking about, 80s and 90s, you know, metal and things like that coming to Portugal, you know, as a kid, how did you discover music? Because that's always my favorite thing to ask people in other countries is how they came across metal and hard rock.
Well, I was born in 74, so 46 years ago. And from the 1924 to 1974, Portugal was under a fascist dictatorship, like Spain, like Italy. So all the alternative and modern manifestations of culture, like the 60s, the flower power, the hippie, the rock and roll, the heavy metal, were really not happening in Portugal. You know, nobody could buy those records, enjoy those concerts, those experiences, because they were simply not existing in Portugal. In 74, on the year I was born, fortunately, things changed. You know, there was a small coup that reestablished democracy. It wasn't like the bloody coup that people think about. It was something like more of a smooth transition. And then in the 80s, the scene literally exploded. I lived in a small suburb of Lisbon, and the suburbs right here are not the good parts. The suburbs are the bad parts here. Okay. No, it's more like the, you know, sometimes the downtown of some American cities is the most dangerous area. Here in Portugal, downtown is cool. Suburbs are a little bit, you know, where more there's more criminality. There's people just trying, you know, to fix their lives, etc. But also, it's where most rock and roll, metal, hip hop, all kinds of alternative genres have come into life. And I remember that when I was growing up in my small suburban town, there was already 3 record shops. So I started to develop a little bit of a flair for hard rock, especially when I was really young. Like, I was a big Rocky, Sylvester Stallone movies. So I loved Survivor. I thought they were like, you know, the shit, really heavy and
heavy. Yeah, yeah.
And then from that moment on, I started to discover a little bit heavier stuff step by step. You know, the 80s were completely exploding in Portugal with Dire Straits, Whitesnake. And eventually one thing led to the other. I started to listen to a lot of heavier stuff. I think that the first band that really struck that metal chord in me was Dio, because I was on the beach. No, it's very common pastime here in Portugal. We have 900 kilometers of coastline, so everybody goes to the beach, and everybody took their like their cassette decks, you know, and they were just blasting stuff. And there was this couple, you know, a boy and a girl, and he had this amazing style, and he had the Holy Diver back patch. And I said, "What the hell is that?" You know, I really was fascinated. It was like a mystic shamanic figure out in the beach. And the girl, she was really like good looking, long hair. You didn't see a lot of people like that in Portugal back in the 80s. So from that moment on, I started listening to Dio, Metallica, Slayer. And then when I went to high school, I immediately listened to harder stuff like King Diamond, Bathory, Celtic Frost. And from that moment on in Europe, around 1990, 89, 1990, the underground tape trading and the underground like scene was blossoming. And I just made a fanzine and immediately started getting tapes from all around the world with really extreme bands and bands that really became famous these days, especially on the black metal, dark metal, death metal. And yeah, and then from that moment on, when we had the fanzine going on, we decided to form a band back then called Morbid God. That
great. And,
yeah, we changed. Great, but everybody was like Morbid Angel, Morbid right. Death, Morbid Saint, you know. So we eventually changed the name back in 92 for Moonspell. And really the motivation about being in the band here was, you know, there was a metal scene, but people were more emulating the things from abroad, like Sepultura or Metallica. So we kind of got all these bands that were like the Portuguese something. and we wanted to make a band that we could tape and send our contacts all around the world. And we didn't think there was a band like this, so we made one.
With the fanzine, were you doing interviews and things like that? Were you doing any kind of maybe even just, you know, correspondence interviews or anything?
Yeah, just, I mean, the fanzines, you said, oh, it's coming out on 87, and then it turned out to come out in 90 or 91.
Yeah. Now,
there was not really a schedule. There wasn't really a timeline. We had, you know, correspondence even. Like, we traded tapes with someone from Brazil, and all of a sudden he got us a Sepultura or a Sarcófago interview that was on the fanzine. We had someone in the UK, and then he got us like Paradise Lost or Cathedral, you know. And I think the best thing about the fanzine back then was that Quarton from Bathory came to Portugal to promote his album Armor Heart. in 1990. I was just 16 years old, but we were huge. We were diehard fans of Bathory. So we went to meet him, and he was kind enough to speak with the fans. We had a little dictaphone, we recorded it, and made the cover of the fanzine and the big central piece. Yeah, but it was mostly based upon stuff we received from all around the world. There was even some, you know, North American bands from thrash metal, black metal, especially. And it was just, it felt great, you know, because the world wasn't so connected as it was today. So I think there was a bit of a charming effect to wait like 2-3 months for the mail, for the letter, for the tapes, for the post. So yeah, but things definitely took their time back then.
Do you still talk to anyone from that time? You know, when you're on a festival or whatnot, you run into people you're like, I interviewed you in 1989, you know, anything like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, when you get to this kind of conversation, it's like nothing else matters. You know, it's just like you get into the underground talk, you get into the things we did. Like, for instance, we had stamps and we put like the post office glue on the stamps. And then when you send it, you could blow dry it and then you could use the stamps again, you know. And most people didn't have enough money for all the records and all the tapes they wanted to trade away. So yeah, I thought, I mean, sometimes we just go on the road with these bands. Like one of the last tours, I think the last tour we did in the States was together with Amorphis and Dark Tranquility, and they are contemporary of Moonspell. So we talked a lot and heard a lot of music from back then. You know, we kind of grew up listening to that kind of sound. Obviously, these days, even like kids that form bands, they have a different experience. You know, they already know about the star system and they know about the big bands and what they can do, where they show up, what's their reach. Back then, it was just, you know, we wanted to make the bands to get together with a couple of friends. So if you fast forward 20 or 30 years and we are on the road with these people, it's almost unavoidable, like old men that would just butt up a beer or a red wine and we start talking about the old times. And for us, the old times is the 90s metal in Europe, all the tapes, all the kept, best kept secrets of the underground. Sometimes it's even annoying, I think, when other people are listening, because you really have to have that context, you know, because it was such a fortunate time to be alive, because quite quickly everything was taking shape around the same time. You know, bands we were forming bands. Some other people were creating the magazine. Some other people were creating the record labels. And that's why we know each other, you know, from the 90s, let's call it this way, which was a very active time for European metal in terms of self-discovery and reaching out to other countries, in our case, then Portugal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 41. So, I mean, my, you know, I got into metal around 91. Like, I got, you know, I was listening to like 80s stuff. You know, Kiss and things like that. But I mean, when I heard Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer and like just totally went down that path, you know, that you start going down the, you know, start reading Metal Maniacs and start reading liner notes and seeing what bands think other bands. And you're like, all right, well, they think that band. So I'm going to check out that band next time I'm at the record store. And, you know, you just kind of go down that path. There's not, you know, now if you say, hey, check out this band, I can boom Spotify it and have it. But, you know, back then it was, you know, you would hear about a band and then you would go on a quest to find that band. You know, if you saw, you know, Fernando wearing a certain shirt in an advertisement or something, you're like, wow, I wonder what he's listening to. If he thinks it's good, then I should check it out. And that was one of the more fun things about metal back in, you know, in the 90s.
Yeah, it's totally true. I remember Nick Holmes from Paradise Lost. He was always sporting this Confessor shirt. And I never heard of Confessor before. And it was a kind of this doom with this kind of more speed metal vocals. And we just found out, yeah, I know there's a big generation gap and people nowadays, they even probably take things for granted because they can test drive anything. You know, it's not like nowadays you have to discover or you have to go and research for this artist or the other one. Everything, it's you have the world at your hands, basically. But I kind of miss that that romance. I think that some things, you know, that you have to wait, it build up such an expectation that it's, I think it's hard to recreate these days, you know. And sometimes I think pressure is something that you have to deal with when you are a musician. But I remember back in the day, that pressure was really just for more stuff, you know. And nowadays, the pressure is for making the stuff people want to hear, in a way. And I think that sometimes it's a bit different. I think we were more, let's say, tailor-made to be fans back then. You know, we were not like costumers. We were not like test driving. We were not taking the music to the gym. It was virtually impossible. Obviously, there's good and bad things to be taken now from all the, you know, the spread of music. It's also a dream come true sometimes. And when the worlds get together, like there is this German company that makes this amazing, that Shall Rise Productions, they made these amazing tape boxes. They are going to make one of Moonspell for the 30 years in 2022. And they made like Hellhammer, they made Celtic Frost. And they just, I write a little liner notes. They invite me together with a bunch of other musicians from those, that were born listening to born as musicians listening to that stuff. And they just send me the tapes. And I say, well, this is the wet dream of any underground. Because we couldn't, I mean, to get like something professional printed, full color, to get like patches inside this amazing box. It's just like, well, I'm saying whenever you want to do stuff, I'm up for it just for the sake of receiving it, you know. So there's stuff that you can bring together. Yeah, but I think that was, I agree, that was one of the most interesting aspects back then, was the discovery. You know, we were almost like students, like going to a library to find out something secret, to find out something of a reference in a book or in a magazine. And that we spread it. We didn't like to spread it to a lot of people, but to the right people. We are also were a bit of an elite back then, you know. We didn't want people that, I remember having the Burzum tapes and the Dark Throne. I said, well, if you listen to Iron Maiden, that's not going to be your thing. And nowadays, people actually do listen to Iron Maiden and listen to Dark Throne. I think in that aspect, it's more democratic. Let's put it this way: it's more available to all the people. But I kind of miss out those times that you didn't know a lot about the bands, and everything was very based on the wonder and the amazement you got. And waiting for an album was just something like unbelievable. I mean, that week before the album came out, to line up in a record shop to buy it, especially in Portugal, where we didn't have 100 albums from that band, just the big bands. But if you wanted like a Tiamat or Samael album, you had to stand on the line for 2 hours to buy one of the two copies, you know. And yeah, and nowadays you go to Discogs and underground metal from Europe, those editions from back then are so collectible. It's unbelievable. I have stuff that I said that costed me like $10 and now it's $600 or something like that, you know. Yeah, so it's, same. Yeah,
you definitely go down the list of you know, old concert t-shirts and things like that that are worth hundreds of dollars now, and you're like, man, I had that one and I wore it and I ripped the sleeves off of it, and you know, and at the end of the day I ended up, you know, using it as a you know, to change my oil or something, you know. You know, just because it became a rag. But I did want to jump onto the new Moonspell album here, Hermitage. What does Hermitage mean to you? Because Hermitage to me growing up in Tennessee was the estate of Andrew Jackson, who was on our, I believe, $20 bill, and he was a slave owner, and but his land was called the Hermitage. So growing up, hearing of the Hermitage to me was his plantation and things like that. So what is it to you? I'm assuming not the same.
Oh, nothing to do with that. Hermitage is a bit more historically a religious place where the so-called hermit saints went to reflect, to fight their demons, to look for answers to their questions. And I think that for an European, especially as we are mostly brought up as Catholics here in Portugal, Hermitage is a place of praying, fasting, meditation, etc. So it's a place of silence. It's a place where you go either to take a break from society, from all the rules, from all the pressure, or then just to disappear because you cannot take it anymore. I think that when I first wrote Hermitage or Hermitage in my notebook in 2017, I think that people were kind of doing that to themselves, regardless of the geography. It seems like we couldn't talk about anything else, even music, without stonewalling ourselves into our own opinion. And it seems like we couldn't get across even with friends. And it seems like if I liked something and you didn't like it, you asked me, what the hell is wrong with you? Why do you like this? You know, so I think that nowadays it's even per law here in Portugal, you have to social distance, you know. But I think we started this off way ago. I think it's kind of spirit of our time, you know, that we are very connected, but our connections ain't real. They are a little bit more based upon something that it's not very real feelings, or that we do not really want to take the option of knowing deeply the person. Sometimes we are discussing anything online. So I think that we were becoming a little bit of hermits within ourselves, metaphorically and poetical speaking. And also when I start reading and research to make the lyrics of the album, I also was surprised to know that a lot of people that went away, they came back in order to bring something more, let's say, to bring their answers, to bring their influence into their community as well. So yeah, it's a place where you go in search of answers, basically.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely didn't want you to, they're trying to cancel this guy. So it's one of those deals where you're like, you know, you don't want to be associated with Andrew Jackson at this point around here. And the song All or Nothing, you know, one of the first lines in it is "the end is near." And at first listen, I mean, was that written during this pandemic? Was it written prior to the pandemic? And
most of the album, musically and lyrically, was written between 2017 and 2019. So it's pre-pandemic. But obviously nowadays, everything we do, everything we talk about, everything that comes out is going to be read under the light of the pandemics. It's not that we can avoid it, really, because besides all the problems, the sanitary problems, the health issues, the economical, the social issues, there's also a domination of the subject, because in every country you wake up knowing the numbers on a daily basis, knowing the new rules, you know, if the country is big or small, it doesn't matter. I think we are all a little bit in the same boat. But everything was written a little bit pre-pandemic. And I think that All or Nothing lyric has much more to do not with the end of the world, but I think as a biography, as a the final chapters on the Moonspell history, let's call it this way. Because even though people say, well, maybe this is a marketing trick and you probably saying this just to get people to listen into you, that's not really right. I think that you never know if the last chapter is going to be the biggest or not of your career, of your path as musicians. But I always felt that Moonspell cannot attain to a certain kind of longevity that it's attributed to the classic bands. You know, we were talking about the 80s and the 90s, and those bands could get to a place both musically and career-wise where they can manage time so much better, you know. And also to Moonspell, for me, it's much more of a struggling band. We never were smart enough, or we never were keen enough or satisfied enough with our music to think this is it. So we're going to repeat it in the next few albums, make a few changes. I think the fact that we thought that, you know, even with the early albums that are very celebrated these days, we didn't think after a while, after playing them, we were not totally satisfied about it. There's bands like this. I think most musicians will have, you know, that kind of articulated talk. Oh, this is our best album and we've never been so good. But I think it's also time for the musicians to be a little bit more honest about what's being in a band. And being in a band, it's being tired, you know, it's hit and miss. You know, it's being daily grinded by the internet, by the negative, by the positive comments. And sometimes you don't know where to stand, you know. And I think that it's healthy through the songs, especially to think about your own end, to have this kind of no strings attached attitude towards your own band. Because I've seen too many people, people that we loved, people that we knew, people that we shared the stage with, being so heavily connected to the band that they were nothing else than just a band member, you know. And even if this defines you, sometimes it doesn't contain you. So I think it's healthy to think that, even Moonspell is temporary. It's not Judas Priest, it's not Black Sabbath, it's not Metallica, you know, and we don't want it to be, because every band has its own history and time. So All or Nothing, it's about being in the band, really, and knowing that sometimes our job will be done, and we hope it was good, you know, and being that also not crashing under the pressure, because fans want you to be there forever. And in a way, as long as they want, we'll be there, because there will be our records, there'll be our documents, let's call it this way, there'll be the past repertoire, there'll be the memories as well. But in Moonspell, it's very, very important to know where to live. So I think nowadays that we're going to be 30 years in 2022, it's healthy to think about the end and to think about having a more no strings attached relationship with your own band, which is also our job. So we'll have to change a lot of stuff if we came to an end abruptly. But also, I think it's better to think about this than to fool yourself that your band will always be in the favor of the fans or in the radar of the press. One day it will happen that you won't be. And if you think about it on a daily basis or here and there, you'll be much more prepared for when it happens. Because otherwise, you know, musicians just end their own lives. They take their own lives. As we know, for so many people in the past years, and the pandemics obviously adds into this isolation and to this lack of attention or need of attention that the musician has and gets it fulfilled on stage, especially. Or I see people also, you know, living a very destructive lifestyle, and here and there they'll get sick and they will end up dying. And I want to have a life after Moonspell, if you get my meaning.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of crazy for you to say, because we're talking about 30 years of the band coming up, and then you're also talking about, you know, Moonspell not having the career of Judas Priest and Metallica and things like that. So you've got, most bands would kill for a 30-year career with multiple albums and tours and things like that. So, I mean, I think you're kind of underselling yourself a little bit, but at the same time, you know, I think it's neat for you to be able to kind of sit back and, you know that the end is near for the band and things like that. And maybe, you know, are you going to continue to do music after Moonspell? Are you wanting to do solo stuff, or what are you wanting to do?
Well, I think to be more accurate, the lyrics should read, "The end is nearer." It's a little bit more near than it was 30 years back. And I don't want to sound ungrateful to the audience, but what I want to say is that, you know, a lot of times, and we deal with a lot of bands, you know, you have to, in a way, to think critically about yourself. It's not only to be in a band, it's hits and misses, you know, and sometimes we don't like to talk about the misses. We want to sweep it under the rug. And I think when you have a really pile of dirt over there, it really can come back to you. So I think this kind of attitude we have towards the band really has to do with the fact that we never wanted or never wished for a musical career. It just happened. You know, I was studying philosophy and I wanted to be a teacher. And back in 94, 95, I started touring internationally and I couldn't deal with it. You know, I said, what is this? You know, I have to give up my studies. It was a long process you know, even for ourselves to believe that we were actually touring and that we were actually selling records and that we were actually selling tickets abroad. And that's a little bit different. When I started touring in the US, I think bands, younger bands, starting bands had more of a plan. You know, the music industry, the stories behind it, also the mythology of the American success for bands, it's way stronger in the bands. It's more imprinted in the bands, you know, when they start than around here in Europe. We start, you know, by having fun. I always seen Moonspell as the black horse running off tracks. I mean, we're from Portugal. We don't have any, you know, rock and roll bands that are famous worldwide. We don't have a Kiss. So we don't know what stardom. And I think that's more the way we deal with it. But obviously, to leave the privilege that we leave, our way of coping with it, it's not to take anything for granted. You know, and I know very well when we start off with a new album that there will be division, there will be bad criticism, there will be good criticism. And in my opinion, from all these years of experience, we fall a little bit in the middle. You know, I think that people that really worship us, probably they could be critical as well. And people that really criticize us, they can like us as well. You never know. It's very volatile. You know, to listen to music, it's not like picking up a car or picking up some food or ordering some pizza. It's something that it can change. You know, you can even change your mind about the pizza while it's being delivered in your... So why not change your mind about music? So having said that, I think that nowadays, I never put all my eggs in one basket, I have to say. Obviously, Moonspell is my main occupation, but I also have a small record label that we handle the re-releases of Moonspell together with Napalm Records and Century Media Records, which are very successful. And we did it because they were sold out of print. And everybody keeps telling me, hey, you can't sell records anymore. I say, yeah, but I have a line of orders here for people that they want to buy stuff on vinyl and on tape. You know, they want a special edition. So we formed a label. And we also have a small activity that is growing now of releasing Portuguese metal bands. We released Occultist, Revenging Evil, really good death metal in the vein of Master and Abomination and Massacre, you know, old new school, as they call themselves. We released Inhuman here from Portugal, Iron Sword, you know, lots of bands. And also I have a little career in literature. I translated stuff. Like, for instance, I Am Legend, I did the Portuguese translation, the book by Richard Matheson, around the time where Will Smith did the movie. And also, I'm just finishing up my first novel that is coming out through Penguin Random House, Portugal. So, yeah, I think in a way I'll be connected with something that is from the creative industries. But I really don't know. Music for me, I related more to Moonspell. You know, I don't think, even though I did some guest vocals for some bands, I think the kind of way I sing and write, it's because of Moonspell. I always had this context, this meaning. I never tried anything else. Really, sometimes I meet some, here in Portugal, people like to make collaborations all the time, and even from all kinds of music. And sometimes here we have a popular folk song, like country for the US, or tango for Argentina, or flamenco for Spain. We have fado, which is like a very sad, melancholic music with acoustic guitar. So I did a little project on that kind of music as well. But yeah, if the question is like, if after Moonspell I'll go on another touring band and do everything the same, I don't think I'll have the energy really.
Right. And as we kind of wrap this up, you know, what's the current future for Moonspell? You know, are you guys waiting for hopefully tours by the end of the year, or what are we looking at?
we have a song in the 2015 album Extinct called The Future is Dark. You know, it was written in 2015. And little did we know that if not dark, it's very bleak. Because nowadays, musicians, we have plan A, but now we have to go through the whole alphabet and up to plan Z. You know, and that's exactly what we're trying to do. In 2020, we also worked hard to manage our expectations because the band is so used to tour and to play like 200 shows a year in Europe and in the world. It can really get really heavy for you not to do anything. So one of the things that we tried to do here in Portugal in 2020 was to play some live shows with the crowd. And, you know, with the back and forth of the pandemics, we could play 4 shows with a crowd. And that was really important, not because of the 4 shows, because we play so much more in a week sometimes when we are on tour, but because we could still, in such a hard, harsh context, play. We also did the streaming, which is a format we're going to repeat. We were waiting and seeing. We wanted to see other bands. We wanted to see how far would you go. I think the first streams were a bit complicated. You know, everybody was getting used to the technology and to the idea. But our streaming was quite all right, I have to say. So I think probably before the end of the summer, we're going to hire a venue here in Lisbon, Portugal, and do a streaming worldwide. We have a lot of festivals lined up, like Wacken, for instance, but we're not really sure if they're going to happen. So we are kind of trying to put stuff to 2022, especially on doing a kind of a tour for the 30 years and for a Hermitage as well. But right now, we don't have any concrete plans other than releasing the album, you know, promoting the hell out of it. Create contents for the fans so they can see it on the YouTube, on Patreon, etc. I think the plan is not to fall off the radar of the fans. And obviously, I think without the live component, we have to work so much harder in communication and promotion. Like we have 4 video clips for Hermitage. Normally we have 1 or 2. So yeah, we are adapting and surviving, you know, until the end that is near comes, you know. But I think that to talk about plans, I think it's wiser to leave them to either the second semester of 2021 or in 2022, which is going to be also a very competitive year. So yeah, we definitely have to bring the fans to our side so that in 2022 they can choose the Moonspell tour, you know, from all the other tours that are going to happen in 2022, which will be, if everything goes right, a year that everybody will get back into business.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. As soon as they open up touring, it's going to be show every night of the week, you know, and every town will have probably a great show every night of the week.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope this outcome. I mean, nowadays it's hard to foresee. Like some people say, oh, it's going to be like a post-war environment and everybody will be crazy going to the shows. Maybe, maybe not. People also can be more selective. You know, there's the fear component because you've been saying don't go to crowds, and then I don't know if all the people are now just out of the sun from one day to the other wanted to go to a crowd with, you know, with no precaution, etc. I don't know. We have to take it day by day, but I hope many shows will come, and I hope this is not the end. I do hope.
Well, I hope it all goes well, and hope all the success for the new album.
Thank you very much.
Moonspell, Hermitage, however you want to say it, and February 26th, Napalm Records. Fernando, man, thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you very much. Health and luck to everyone.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Chris Aiken from Aftershocks reminding you that if you want to see the interviews, see the artists, and see Matt and I ramble on with the artists, subscribe to us on YouTube. Just go to the link bit.ly/AftershocksPod1, the number 1. So bit.ly/AftershocksPod1, And you can subscribe and see all of our videos in this videocast.